to Is Able, the radio show about possibility, where we look at what a person with disabilities can do rather than what they cannot do. Hello, this is Dr. Steve Nurse, and this is our series on learning disabilities. And the reason that we chose this topic is because a learning disability is a hidden disability. It's not like walking down with a sign on your forehead that says, I have a learning disability. But it can be just as disabling as someone who uses a wheelchair or someone with a sensory disability. And so that's why we've chosen this topic. And also, we are really focusing on adolescents and adults, because when you have a learning disability, you don't just like turn 16 or 21 and it goes away. And we almost expect more from adolescents and certainly adults in some of those, we talk about soft tissue issues and soft areas in learning disabilities. And we'll go into that in more detail. But last episode, we left our heroines talking about the basics of learning disabilities. And also working with me is Linda Price, Dr. Linda Price. And Dr. Linda Price is a colleague of mine and a great friend. And she is now in Mississippi, straight from Louisiana and straight from Texas, where she's gone through hurricanes and things like that. And she also has a website called littleoldladyprofessor.com. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Good, good. My memory is still holding. So, and maybe she can even put a link to these broadcasts on her website. So,
absolutely.
With that, what we want to talk about today is learning disabilities and how, you know, we tend to think about a learning disability as being one thing, or people with learning disabilities to need the same accommodation. And it's not true. I've seen work evaluations done for some persons with learning disabilities that are just cut and paste and say a person with learning disabilities needs more time on tests. They need a quiet room. And while that's probably true for all of us, persons with learning disabilities have a variety of different different effects, or I guess I don't really want to call them symptoms, but it affects each person differently. Linda, do we know what causes learning disabilities?
You know, that's one of the biggest frustrations about this field. If anybody could ever figure out definitively what causes LD, they should retire to Bermuda tomorrow and live off of, you know, make $1 million.
Sure.
Because nobody knows. What we hypothesize is that it could be when the baby is still in utero that there's too much testosterone that goes into one side of the brain or the other side of the brain. That's one theory. We don't have enough brain slices or enough brain scans to know that. We do know that there may be a fairly significant amount of people that have learning disabilities that have been in motorcycle accidents, that maybe have had closed head injuries, babies that are what we call blue babies, babies that are born that don't get enough oxygen. One of the real, the sad ones to me is that I know, Steve, you know about fetal alcohol syndrome,
right.
And we also have what we call fetal smoking syndrome. It seems like a large group of those kids have learning disabilities, But we honestly don't know. What we do know very clearly is that it is something that happens within the brain itself. It is an organic problem. It's not from poor teaching. It's not from poor parenting. It's not because somebody ate too much sugar. It is a physical manifestation in the brain.
And
that's all we know.
And it's interesting because we also have FAE, which is a fetal alcohol effect. And when we start using like effect or theory, we're telling people really what we don't know. And I think that that's, right. I've heard that, you know, we sometimes talk about environmental things. So it could be something that a child, like you said, in utero or that the mother is exposed to, or it could be, like you said, some type of traumatic injury. But, I think right now in our medical world and, you know, for us here in America, we really like to pigeonhole things. We like to have a direct nexus, we really want to see the Marlboro man have lung cancer and, live to 95 and he didn't. So it's tough to create that exact nexus saying this specific act or this specific environmental effect caused this learning disability. And I think that's probably, that's got to be really frustrating for parents too, wouldn't you think?
Well, I think that's one of the biggest hurdles for parents is that, if you don't mind me saying this, their kid looks normal. Their kid seems normal. The vast majority of all the folks with LD that I've ever worked with are very, very intelligent people, Steve. And so you've got a child that is very bright, just seems to really, seem like everything is okay. And then all of a sudden they hit the wall. They go to school, they can't read, they can't write. They may be the kid that can't kick the kickball. They're the kid that when you look at their room, it's like a tornado's hit it because they literally cannot manage things. They cannot organize things. This is the kid that, they seem to really know what they want to say, but they can't say it. They can't put the words on paper. Or this is the kid that, for example, you just want to spank them or you want to shake them all the time because they don't remember what you say. They just seem to not be listening to you or not hearing you. All of those are clear symptoms of learning disabilities, but we all go through that.
Right. So, I think that's really important though, is the things that a learning disability can cause that affects a person's life are maybe exaggerated in the person with a learning disability, but are things that we all deal with. But if you look at, I've seen a million lists of, all these famous people that have a learning disability. Alexander Graham Bell, Thomas Edison, Albert Einstein, George Patton. Winston Churchill, my hero of all time. So Richard Branson, of course, his learning disability was the reason he went up into outer space. I don't know. But I think that that's true. So let's break this down a little bit because we call them specific learning disabilities. And so it's generally a disorder that in understanding or in using language, either spoken or written. And those two things are very separate. Right. Looking at something on the paper, we've even seen things like placing a colored sheet over written work and somehow that can help. I think there's a lot of things that we've tried. We just don't know. So it can be issues like thinking and speaking. But we've really broken it down into different areas like dyslexia, dyscalculia, dysgraphia, and we'll go through those individually. So let's talk about dyslexia first. How would you put that, how would you describe that, Linda, in a nutshell or in a rowboat or whatever?
And probably in a rowboat. And,
yes.
And let me go back just a second, Steve, and say that it's helpful to think of learning disabilities as an umbrella term. It's kind of like people say, I have cancer. And you say, do you have cancer? Do you have lung cancer? Do you have prostate cancer? Do you have bone cancer? What kind of cancer do you have? LD is similar. Not saying LD is a disease, but I'm saying LD is similar in that there will be all these different kind of subcategories that will fall underneath it. And the one definition that I really, really, really push, this to me is the gold standard, and it's on Little Old Lady Professor, and I'll add more information on there if people need it, is the definition from the National Joint Committee on Learning Disabilities definition. And I would suggest that people go look at that definition because that kind of summarizes it. So to go to the concept of dyslexia, some people would say, is being word blind. That's the simplest way to say it. And it really what happens is that the brain itself does not decode symbols. Those can be like letters. Those can be like the adding, subtracting, multiplying, or dividing sign. Those can be like, like the at sign that we have when we look at like an email address.
Yeah.
The brain itself does not decode symbols. And reading is probably the most, without a doubt, complicated cognitive process that any human being will ever face. And what happens is that when people with dyslexia try to read, it's all gibberish for them. You know, the typical stereotype is that, okay, letters reverse, like it's a B looks like a D or a P looks like a Q or whatever. But it's much more complicated than that. And folks with dyslexia basically will look at the same printed page that you and I look at, but they can't decode it. Does that make sense?
Sure. And, it's interesting, too. It's not just as simple as you've heard people say, well, people who are dyslexic read things backwards. And I had a professor tell me one time, well, you know, that may be true, but if you read things backwards all the time consistently, you could read, you know. So it's that mixture of, and, you know, I'm starting to think about, you know, technology today. And I think we talk about decoding symbols and setting up today, you sent me emojis. You know, how about emojis and even thinking to decode something like that? You know, I think that that could be, an issue too. So dyslexia, then you could even, break, if I understand what you're saying correctly, is dyslexia could even be broken down itself into many, many different components.
Well, and this is the rule of thumb that you and I are going to say throughout the broadcast. It's one size does not fit all. And different people will be diagnosed as dyslexic, but they may have a different kind of subset of characteristics. For example, some people that are dyslexic are able to decode like short words, but you have like a two or three syllable word, or you have a long sentence or a paragraph, and they fall apart. So their reading speed is extremely slow. Or you will run across somebody, for example, that like one of the big things in college is that a lot of times people need to take a second language to qualify for a degree. And they may be able to kind of wade through English with a lot of support, but you give them a different language and they just can't do it because the symbols don't make sense to them.
Yeah. That does make sense to me. And the other thing that's important is that when you, as a teacher, when you teach reading, if you are reading let's say you're reading a primer and you say, you know, Dick and Jane go, you know, if you have to be able to read at a certain speed to put a sentence together so that it makes sense. You know, you need to be able to kind of think of that sentence as a component. And that was the problem that I had with working with kids with learning disabilities in school, in junior high school, is that they could not, they went so slow thinking from the first word of the sentence to the last word of the sentence.
Right.
You could say, well, what does that mean? And they, you know, look at you like an owl in a hailstorm and, you know, they don't know. So, so I think that reading speed is also something. Now, I also found kids with dyslexia that could memorize, you know, and that was that was one of the ways that they kind of camouflaged their disability, was to memorize something. And then you would go back and say, well, what's this word? They didn't know, you know. So it could be, you know, I was also hearing that Terry Bradshaw, who was, you see him on the TV all the time. You know, he was, let's see, he was a football quarterback. Yes, Rick's giving me signals. He just threw a pass my way. Well, no, that's a bad choice of words, too. Terry Bradshaw was a quarterback, I think, for the Pittsburgh Steelers, correct? Yeah. But anyhow, one of the things that he said that he had difficulty was with when he would get the ball, when somebody would hike the ball, was the rhythm of the numbers and the words that they would call out, you know. So he had a very specific way that he kind of worked around that. So let's talk then about dyscalculia. That's not Dracula, that's dyscalculia. And so dyscalculia has to do with math and numbers. Can you explain a little bit about that? Or a lot?
Sure. If you think about dyslexia as dealing with symbols and letters, so people think about it with reading, then you think about dyscalculia as being math symbols. And then the next one that we'll talk about, which is dysgraphia, you think about writing. So it's like different parts of the brain may be having trouble functioning in those specific areas. Dyscalculia really, really is based in math reasoning and math symbols. And these are the folks, God bless them, that they have a terrible time in elementary school trying to remember their times tables. They have a horrible time trying to do long division or short division because they can't remember the steps and sequence. They absolutely go nuts when they get into like basic algebra and basic geometry classes because they can't understand the formulas and they can't remember how to put the pieces together. I think I told you that I worked with this fabulously bright man when I was at the University of Minnesota. The physics program at the U came to me and they said, we have this guy that's an honor student from Cambridge that we have just brought into our doctoral program. And he's incredibly bright, but he's flunking all the tests. And we don't know what to do with him. And he tells us that he has a learning disability. Well, come to find out, Steve, that this guy, for all of his exams, did three-dimensional models.
Amazing.
He never took a pencil and paper test. Exactly. So he was thinking in physics in like formulas and hypotheses that were beyond what most of us would ever think about, but he could never put it actually on paper.
You know, I'm starting to get pumped now because I really find that to be fascinating because again, we all use our crutches. We all use our ways to get around
exactly.
it. And I had a young man in a junior high school class and in a math class. This was mm-hmm. actually for kids that had been kicked out of school for behavior. And we were trying to figure out some way that he could remember and do multiplication tables. And mm-hmm. so what we did, he made little models of like dice, and he put the different mm-hmm. dots on the dice. And so he mm-hmm. could, and he made some of his own because, you know, we went up to 12 times 12, but he could look at the dice and,
yep.
and visualize and tell you that in a second. We would do these right. Time trials where they would try to go through, you know, 100 multiplication tables in a minute or something. We timed it, and then the kids got their name on the wall or something if they did it. But he could do it mm-hmm. using his dice. I mean, the kid looked like he was using an abacus, you know, swinging right. these things around. But if you ask him what's 6 times 6, he could not do it. You know, he could not.
Right.
He needed that visual image. And this has got to, I mean, if both you and I think about this, and we're going to be talking later about, you know, aspects that people need on the job to, you know, to get by. I mean, I would think, and there are also things that, like when we used to test kids, we used to say they were able to complete the task 40% of the time, you know. Well, if you work as a clerk in a store and you give correct change only 40% of the time, you're going to be in big trouble, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, I noticed mm-hmm. even I was talking to some folks, even at a place like McDonald's now, they've got it set up so if kids have dysgraphia, or excuse me, dyscalculia, did I pronounce mm-hmm. that right? Pretty close.
Now you got it.
Close
now
in,
you got
it's,
it.
It's close enough. It's close enough.
But
that they're doing their touch type of on the, you know, when they put in a Big Mac, you know, they press Big Mac. Mm-hmm. They press Big Mac and write whatever else you want on that. It comes up with a number and it really does all your figuring for you. So you've got the mm-hmm. visual symbol of the Big Mac or the McRib or whatever it is, you know. I just think that's really, really interesting that we can get to the same, the beauty of it is we can get to the same answer. We can get to the same solution mm-hmm. by going around the table different ways. And even if I think with myself, I always scored really low on math aptitude tests, but I was always mm-hmm. I was always good on being able to work things out, you know, and how many acres in this field. But a lot of times what it involved me doing was really writing down the problem and almost mm-hmm. Drawing out the field and what shape it was and, you know, breaking it down into triangles or whatever. So that's really good. What are some other ways that could affect you on a job if you didn't have, think about that, Linda. What do you think are some other ways that not having good math skills would affect you on a job?
Well, what's interesting is not only a job, but like in everyday life, people that have dyscalculia have a devil of a time cooking because they can't, you know, like you get a recipe and you have to transpose sometimes. You're going to make this from, I don't know, you know, milliliters into cups, or you're going to, you know, you're going to add an extra tablespoon of lemon juice. they can't do that. Their brain doesn't process that. So they tend to have, not saying if you have dyscalculia, you won't be a good cook, but the actual mathematical process is very, very hard for them. Let's say you've got, talking about work, you know that I love to make Mardi Gras costumes. And if somebody, for example, is working at Hobby Lobby or Joann Fabrics, they would have a hard time working in like the fabric section because they can't do measurement. Because you would come up and say, okay, I need a half a yard of this and I need 3/4 yard of this. And, you know, I need 5/8 of this trim. They can't automatically transpose that in their head and figure that out. One of the things that always makes me crazy, and we'll talk about this a lot when we talk about accommodations, is people that will not let folks with learning disabilities use calculators, either for maybe a test, or let's say that you're studying to be a pipe fitter and you're going to take your licensing exam. And they'll say to you, well, I'm sorry, you can't use a calculator as part of the exam. That's just like telling me that's extremely nearsighted that I can't take my glasses in.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So
yeah.
Anytime you run across numbers, anytime you have to think about mathematical reasoning on a job, you're gonna have trouble. Let's say you're studying to be a nurse, or you're in one of the science fields. Any kind of mathematical stuff could cause you real problems. Because again, you have trouble mentally manipulating that statistical information in your head.
You know, it's interesting. When you mentioned about cooking, I think you'd want to make sure that if you were putting in cayenne pepper, you would not want to put in 2 cups of cayenne pepper in your chili, in your chili mix on that.
Exactly.
You know, and that's... And again, those are symbols. Those are also things that could, if they were written correctly, if you could almost write a recipe and make it much more visual, and
right.
It would work for folks with learning disabilities. Yeah, and
absolutely.
And do you think of other kinds of symbols, electrical symbols, symbols that are used for, different fields. You know, you had mentioned, we'd mentioned the little at sign that we use with computers and stuff. And so I think that that's also really important. We're getting close here. To closing up this section. And now we're going to talk about a little bit more in our next section about dysgraphia, and then talk about some of the associated deficits and disorders from having a learning disability. And hopefully we'll also at that point get into some of the ways to make accommodations for persons with learning disabilities. I have a friend that is a list writer. Everything that they do, they make a list. And that is one way to even work around a learning disability, or to have a log that you use, cues, even having a telephone now that has an alarm system on it even works. So I think that those are all extremely important. And so with that, let's get ready to close this session. And I'll be back with my Louisiana, Mississippi, Texas colleague in the next episode. So goodbye, Linda, for this series, and do not hang up. And we will talk to you later.
To stream this or any other episode of Is Abled with Dr. Stephen W. Nurse, go to voiceofashon.org and look under the Shows tab.